This is a recording of Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20, as criteria for Book of Mormon kingship, by Taylor Halverson, published in Interpreter, a Journal of Mormon Scripture, read by Tyler Moulton. This article contains tables that cannot be fully reproduced in the audio recording. Please refer to the printed format available online for further details and scripture references. Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20, as criteria for Book of Mormon kingship, by Taylor Halverson. Likely the most succinct set of verses in the Bible that express God's expectation for a king are found in Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 through 20. These verses, I argue, are crucial criteria for understanding Book of Mormon kingship. Quote, "When thou art come unto the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, and shall possess it, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me. Thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee which is not thy brother. But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord hath said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And it shall be, when he sitteth upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book out of that which is before the priests, the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes, to do them, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment, to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children, in the midst of Israel." End quote. I interpret these passages as a set of God-decreed kingly do's and don'ts. I'll begin with the don'ts. 1. Don't acquire many horses. In other words, don't raise a military. 2. Don't return the people to Egypt, or don't return people to the house of bondage or apostasy. 3. Don't acquire many wives. 4. Don't seek after silver and gold. What should the king be doing with all his time and influence? 1. Have a copy of the scriptures. 2. Read the scriptures every day. 3. Teach the scriptures. And 4. Do not lift yourself up above your brethren. Remarkably, God doesn't want a human king to do any of the things we typically associate with leaders. Rather, God simply wants a leader who is a lover of Scripture. Why? Because God himself is the king. As Jacob so beautifully records, "For he that raiseth up a king against me shall perish, for I, the Lord, the King of heaven, will be their king. And I will be a light unto them for ever that hear my words." There is no need to replace God on the divine throne of kingship with some fallible human king. Unfortunately, humans have masterly usurped God's role and power as king. The Book of Mormon narrative is driven in part by this very pressing question: who is to be the king? How that question was asked and answered contributed to significant portions of Book of Mormon narrative production. What is so striking about the seven verses quoted earlier is that expressions of Book of Mormon kingship align so well with this rubric for kingship. For those who seek to argue that Joseph Smith was the imaginative and enterprising author of the Book of Mormon, I find it difficult to believe that Joseph Smith was so versed in the Bible that he could correctly identify the only seven consecutive verses in the entire Bible where God lays out his do's and don'ts for kingship, and then build a book of hundreds of thousands of words that contains kingship narratives that seem to be strong examples and counterexamples of what happens when kings do or do not fulfill God's expectations. Here are some compelling examples of how well the Book of Mormon represents God's expectations for kingship as set forth in Deuteronomy 17. Let's begin with Nephi. First, the don'ts. Don't acquire many horses. There is no mention of Nephi seeking after horses, though he did arm his people to defend themselves from enemies, but his trust was not in the arm of flesh, but in the Lord. Don't return the people to Egypt, or apostasy. Nephi led the people into a new promised land, just as Moses had done. Don't acquire many wives. Nephi did not seek after additional wives. And don't seek after silver and gold. Nephi did seek after silver and gold, but only with the intent to support his society, not to empower or ingratiate himself. Now the dues. Have a copy of the scriptures. Nephi obtained the scriptures from Laban. Read the scriptures every day. Nephi was quite motivated about the scriptures, so likely he was a regular reader. Live and teach the scriptures. Nephi lived and taught the scriptures. Do not lift yourself up above your brethren. Nephi did not lift himself up above his people. In fact, he rejected the title of kingship. In summary, Nephi fulfills God's expectations of kingship in an exemplary fashion. Now King Benjamin. King Benjamin protected his people from enemies and apparently had a military, but his trust was not in the arm of flesh, but in the Lord. King Benjamin did not lead people to apostasy. He did not seek after additional wives, and he did not seek after the wealth of the world. King Benjamin had the scriptures. There's no specific scripture indicating that King Benjamin read the scriptures daily. However, the thrust of this prescription in Deuteronomy is that the king should be a scriptorian. King Benjamin, according to the Book of Mormon record, appears to have thoroughly immersed his life in the scriptures. King Benjamin lived and taught the scriptures to his sons and to his people. And King Benjamin did not lift himself up above his people. Like Nephi, Benjamin fulfills God's expectations of kingship in an exemplary fashion. Now let's evaluate King Noah against Deuteronomy 17. Noah raised a military. He put his trust in the arm of flesh, not in God, who is the divine warrior. Noah led the people into apostasy and bondage. Noah had many wives and concubines. Noah sought the gold and silver of the people for his own purposes. Noah was apparently ignorant of scriptures. No scripture indicates that Noah had any awareness of scripture. Instead, the priests are the primary agitators in the trial of Abinadi, misusing scripture to attempt to trap him. Noah did not live or teach the scriptures. In fact, the priests, to whom he delegated his role as scriptorian, appear to be familiar with scripture, but they misuse it in an attempt to destroy Abinadi. Noah lifted himself up above the people. Noah was a spectacular failure in living as God expected kings to live. In fact, it is striking how distinctly opposite all Noah's actions were from God's ideal for kingship, as set forth in Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 through 20. Finally, let's evaluate Mosiah 2. Mosiah 2 protected his people from enemies and apparently had a military, but his trust was not in the arm of flesh, but in the Lord. Mosiah 2 did not lead people to apostasy. There are no scriptures indicating that Mosiah 2 had or sought after additional wives. Mosiah 2 did not seek after the wealth of the world. Mosiah 2 had the scriptures and knew them well. It was the writings and scriptures that likely helped convince him to get rid of kingship. Mosiah 2 lived and taught the scriptures to his sons and to his people. Mosiah 2 did not lift himself up above his people. Like Nephi and Benjamin, Mosiah 2 fulfills God's expectations of kingship in an exemplary fashion. I believe that the Book of Mosiah was constructed as a sandwich narrative. Good King, Benjamin, then bad King, Noah, then good King, Mosiah 2. This narrative structure highlights why Mosiah 2 recognized the problem of kingship. Kingship was a major factor in Nephite conflict, suffering, and apostasy. Mosiah 2, therefore, was motivated to disband kingship. Ironically, much of the historical backdrop for the Book of Alma and the Book of Helaman revolves around people fighting for a return to kingship, while others fight to avoid it. If Joseph Smith was the putative author of the Book of Mormon, it is incredibly remarkable that he had prescience enough to construct kingship narratives that so unfailingly adhered to or perfectly disagreed with what God expected of a king, as expressed in Deuteronomy 17. Future studies could take each leader from the Book of Mormon and hold them up to the standard of Deuteronomy. The comparisons and contrasts among Book of Mormon leaders as to how well they fulfilled God's expectations of leaders will likely prove enlightening. This has been a recording of Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20 as criteria for Book of Mormon kingship by Taylor Halverson. published in Interpreter, a Journal of Mormon Scripture, Volume 24, 2017. Read by Tyler Moulton. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed, if it remains unchanged, the journal and its website are credited, and it is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles and resources on Mormon Scripture can be found at mormoninterpreter.com.